Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, spirited conversations with interesting people. I am your host, Christopher Hart. Now, am I drinking what looks like a cocktail? Yes. Is it a cocktail? No, because a cocktail, this is actually an energy drink, a cocktail requires booze plus other things. So we should add some booze to it. A little Waterford, a little dabble, do ya? So we've been off for the last month, and by off, I mean off from this show, but not off. And I think what we're going to do, and Brandon had a great, great freaking idea, is that every year we're going to take January and February off to work on everything else we're working on, to focus on the show. But we actually have a great couple of episodes coming up. So I developed a mortal enemy with a man named Sam Hewen became my best friend, and then I found out Sam Hewen had another best friend, and long story short, I now hate Josh Horowitz. So what I did, and I say that purely out of jest and jealousy, I invited Josh to do the show today, and you know what he did? He accepted. Josh is, by golly, the nicest GD man I've ever met in my entire life. I can't even cuss talking about him. He's so wholesome. Josh joins me today on the show. We talk about Sam Hewen. We talk about Happy, Sad, Confused. We talk about Josh's career. Josh has a career spanning two decades interviewing, by God, some incredible names, absolute legends in this industry. And he really, truly is a really, really nice guy. So we have a few drinks. We talk about his life. And I got to tell you, I go into it wanting to hate the guy because Sam Hewen's his best friend. But actually, how can you not love Josh Horowitz? He's so nice. So today I sat down with Josh Horowitz. We talked through his life, his career, his people he interviewed, and the difficulty interviewing. There's actually a lot of bad stuff that happens behind the camera. Even with this show, I'm sure it happens on a much larger scale with his show. You know, guests that are not fully informed or guests that are not fully committed. So, and how you have to deal with that. So we actually had a great conversation. So my hat's off to the guy. He couldn't be, I couldn't be a bigger fan. So, but let's pay the bills and then we'll get to the interview real quick. So I've talked about this a million times. Our chief sponsor, our official sponsor, my favorite sponsor is Waterford Irish Single Malt Whiskey. So if you're familiar with the concept of terroir and wine, you'll appreciate Mark Rainier's Waterford Single Malt Whiskey from Ireland. Mark is combining his Scotch whiskey and fine wine talents to produce an authentic series of Irish single malt whiskeys based on traditional wine industry principles. I mean, this we've talked about this whiskey a bunch. 100 proof, Irish single malt, single grain, single farm, single origin. Everything about this is pure, unadulterated, natural spirit directly from nature, straight to your glass. I mean, it's so awesome. So we got to drink a little bit of Waterford today. It's in my energy drink now. And talk to Josh Horowitz. It was awesome. So let's get to it. Without further ado, please welcome my guest, the host of Happy, Sad, Confused. There's actually a few things he's about to be hosting coming up. A big fan and my new best friend, Sam, you're out, Josh Horowitz. Cheers. All right, Josh, buddy, thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me, man. It's good to see you.
I'm not going to say starstruck, but I'm a little nervous. I'll tell you why. So I've always been slightly jealous of you, right? Like just, I had no intention of doing the show other than just having a few drinks with a few people. The tagline is spirited conversations with interesting people. And I a few years ago, I think it's been a couple of years now, we got a little well-known, somewhat well-known actor named Sam Heughan to do the show. And I discovered in research of him that he has a best friend that has his own show and is now my mortal enemy. So
we are, we're part of the fan club. We're co-presidents of the fan club of Sam Heughan. It's good to, yeah, I mean, we were talking before, we've never officially met, but we have met along the transom of the Sam Heughan universe,
the multiverse. Yeah,
exactly. But no, there's room for plenty of Sam Heughan friends in the media, and we're just two of them.
Well, it was for me, you know, of course I watched the show, me and my wife together, you know, we end our night with a great episode of Outlander. But what really kind of won me over with him is he is genuinely a whiskey fan, a huge whiskey nerd. So to me, the first time I got to meet him, I think at WizardCon a couple of years ago, I was like, oh, this guy like actually likes whiskey. It's not just a thing, right? It's not just a business or a revenue stream. It's like, dude, I love a good drink. And so I fell, of course, in man love with Sam Heughan. And then, yeah, I found you. And I think we even had a little clip where I threw a little shot at you that kind of circled. And Sam's like, Josh who? dude, yeah, I'm excited to meet you. I have so much I want to talk to you about. And I figured we would do it over drinks.
I love it. This was an easy invite to say yes to for a variety of reasons, and the drinks only help. Even if it's 11 a.m. here in New York, I'm gonna summon up the courage to drink with you, my friend.
It's 10 a.m. here, so
yeah. But you're a pro. This is what you do.
Yeah. It's I think I've talked about this before, but many years ago, I used to work shift work in aviation, private jets and charters and that sort of thing. And you'll work all night, get off at 7 a.m., and then you don't want waffles. You want like steak and a beer.
Right.
And it'll permanently ruin your concept, this construct of appropriate times to drink. And now you can have a 10 a.m. whiskey and not really think about it.
I mean, I will say that story started very chillingly when you were talking about working in aviation and about to start talking about drinking. And I was about to report you because I can't think of a worse combination.
Okay. That's a fair point. But
I got it.
I wasn't, it was definitely off duty, but I wasn't a pilot. I didn't actually handle planes. It was all the logistics side, the backside, you know, if someone wants to go from point A to point B, we handled all that stuff. So
what should I be starting with? Should I be starting with this particular one? Guide me. What do I do?
Yeah. What did remind me what we sent you?
So I think the one you just opened is I have that one. That's Waterford.
So this is an Irish whiskey. This is a great, 100 proof, all organic. There's a big push for terroir, but it's just light enough that I think in the mornings might be a great palate warmer.
Okay.
It's a little complicated. If you grab the bottle by the neck.
Okay.
And then put your thumb like this.
Yeah.
And then just push. It comes right off.
Look at that. Got all the tricks.
I
should fill it to the top of this glass, right? That's how it works.
Yeah. I think morning pours, something a little lighter might be best.
No, trust me. I know my limits.
So you are the guy that interviews, right? Like you are, what's that comic book? Who Watches the Watcher? have you been interviewed? Have you been on this side of the screen for questions?
I certainly have. It's not, probably 20 times in my 20-year career. You know, it's not like I generally speaking, I always say when people invite me to be a commentator or an interview subject, I'm like, I'm much better at the other side. That being said, look, I'm good at a party. I've got good stories. If you mention a celebrity to me, who's your favorite celebrity? Invariably, I might have a funny story around it. It's so ingrained in me to make the other person look good and funny and smart that it's counterintuitive of me sometimes to be like the focal point.
Sure.
But again, that's what the whiskey is going to help with. And that's what you're going to help with. You're going to bring out the best in me.
Yeah. It's funny. You mentioned something that I figured we'd get to later, but let's get to it now. 20-year career. You look incredible. You look, I'm 34. I look like I've lived a very hard life compared to Josh Horowitz.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
You're 40.
45.
45.
Yeah. Jesus. It's going to catch up. It's one of these things where I know, like, overnight at some point, it's just like the hair is going to go white and fall out. Like the gut's going to just explode. It's just going to be like that Dorian Gray painting is just going to catch on fire. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, look, I mean, I've worked for most of my career for quote unquote youth brands, for MTV, the bulk of my career. So like by all intents and purposes, they should have like taken me out in the back and shot me like 12 years ago. So it's a miracle that I'm still where I'm at. And maybe my bountiful dark hair and youthful complexion has helped. I don't know.
Man, I think, you know, I don't know how old Sam is, but I think you are you older than Sam?
Yeah, I think he's, I want to say he's like 40, early 40s.
Yeah, I think he's 41 or 42.
Yeah. No, he turned 40 last year. I know, because I asked him about turning 40. I think he's maybe 41 by now, but yeah.
It's been an incredible journey. And, you know, how often do you Google yourself? Do you do the Google Trends where you kind of see what's.
I wish I could say I'm above that kind of thing, but I've done it. Sure.
Yeah. But don't feel bad.
I mean, it's only twice a day though. It's not a weird thing for me. Like it's just, I need to just see what people are saying at all times. Christopher, what? Why are you judging me now?
Well, I was trying to do some digging. And if you Google yourself, the first picture that comes up is Sam Heughan. Like you're permanently tied to him.
That's amazing.
And then, you know, so I was looking through your history. You have interviewed everyone. There is no, one of the hardest parts that we have on this show is just the pitch to some people. Like I'm a big fan of Doug Jones, right? Doug Jones is this iconic actor who, yep, most people wouldn't recognize unless it was in prosthetics, right? Like he's got these iconic roles. And the moment you mention ESPN, they're like, we don't like sports. I'm like, we don't talk about sports. Like that's the last thing we do. We drink, it's a camaraderie thing. And then same thing with females. It's hard to pitch to some actresses, managers, like it's just a conversation, like trying to get more. And that's the one criticism we get is like, you guys should have more females. I would love to have a deep, you know who I would love? I would do anything in this world to have a drink with Kathy Bates.
Oh,
that would like be how
gold.
How incredible would that
gold
be?
I think she's evaded me too for what it's worth. She'd be awesome. She'd be fantastic.
Is there a white whale, someone that, because you've had this incredible repertoire, not just interviews, like skits, you know, you've done things with Benedict Cumberbatch and I mean, the list goes on and on. Is there someone that you've always wanted but can't get?
Yeah, there are dozens. The ones I go to off the top of my head, there's some filmmakers. Like, so, I mean, look, you know, if you follow my stuff, you know, kind of like there's a wide breadth of the kind of stuff I do, right? I do a lot of silly sketches for MTV and Comedy Central now. I do more serious kind of long form conversations for my podcast, which also includes a lot of filmmakers. I'm like a big old ginormous film geek, as you probably know by now. So like, certainly there are people like, you know, go to my childhood, Spielberg, Lucas, like those folks have eluded me. I've probably talked to each of them like 10 words on a red carpet, but that's not a real conversation. Podcast, like one of my white whales that I've been trying to get. He actually has a movie coming out soon, is Nick Cage. I've talked to Nick Cage. I've done like some short form conversations with him, but I've never done like the deep dive conversation with Nick Cage. And I'm obsessed with him because he's not only an amazing actor, but like just from another planet in the best possible way. And I want to dig into all of that. Yeah, but the list gets smaller as I get older, as I age into it. I mean, it's a good problem to have, but I'm knocking them out. I'm knocking out most of them. And it's becoming more and more like, okay, I've talked to that person for like 6 minutes, but I really want to do like the 45 minute, like deep dive conversation. And then it's also just like catching up with the next wave, but like the ones that get me really excited are the ones like that I grew up with, right? Like the people in like the, 80s and 90s that like I was watching their films. I was obsessed with Jim Carrey. Like I'd love to do on the podcast at some point.
Incredible conversation for sure.
Yeah. And I've done stuff with him. I actually did a skit with him years ago, which as you can imagine is like, oh my God, you're like doing a comedy sketch with Jim Carrey. Like that's out of this world. But he's such like a thoughtful, interesting dude to say the least that I'd love to have that like kind of real substantive conversation with too. But that's the beauty of this job. It's like, there's never going to be an end. I'm going to die with like 1,000 people I never talked to that I wish I could have talked to. So like, that's what keeps it interesting. The day I'm like, yep, there's no one left on the list is the day I should probably retire.
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree. I think the concept of having a genuine connection and a substantive conversation with, you know, a lot of, what do you call them when you do the press junket, quick 2 minute, you know,
yep.
There's no substance or depth there. And a lot of times when some people try to slip in some really complicated or hard pressing questions, like there's been some famous clips of that guy that was interviewing Robert Downey Jr. and brings up the 90s and Robert leaves. Yeah. Yep. It's a tough thing to pull off, but if you can have that moment and that connection and it comes from a good place. Like there's, I don't think anyone feels threatened by Josh Horowitz, right? Like there's clearly a very nice gentleman.
Those fools. Like,
the intentions are clearly good.
Sure. Of course. And I think I appreciate that. And I think that's behooved me well over the years. Like, because I certainly did my time, especially in the early years when I was doing this kind of thing, doing these junkets, which I think by now everybody knows what that's like. As you said, they're like 4 minute interviews. You walk into a hotel room and it's like, it's just so counter to anything like substantive or real. But, you know, I was able to make that work and I was able to convey, I think, a seriousness about like my love of what they do, right? Like that came through. Even if I was having fun with them or being silly with them, I think the actors and the filmmakers could sense that I knew what I was talking about and I loved what they did. And I was there, as you say, for a good purpose. I want them to look good. I'm without fawning over them, just being real with them and just like, you know, talking about the art in a fun way, hopefully. And then, you know, I kind of built on that after years of doing it, built on that trust. And then I was able to kind of launch these other cool things, like launching what was initially called After Hours on MTV, which was my initial like sketch series, and getting the buy-in of celebrities to do crazy stuff with me for longer periods of time. And then later on, as the podcast wave hit, starting my own podcast about 8 years ago. And by then I'd done like, you know, 6 conversations with like every movie star and every publicist knew me. So like, I could say like, you know, you want to sit down with me for 45 minutes. And they knew, as you say, they were in a safe space, even if it might go silly and go off the rails, it was for a good purpose. It wasn't a gotcha conversation. It was a loving chat that would hopefully make their client look good. So,
Yeah. Has there been, like one of the things that we do is we always offer, not necessarily final cut or final approval, but I tell them like I told you before we started recording, if there's anything we want to cut, just let me know.
Right.
And when there's alcohol involved, I have had a few, publicists reach out to me as soon as the interview was over and say, hey, can you send me a copy of that first just to make sure it's all clean?
Yeah.
And of course we've got a great team, Brandon and Jack, they know what to cut. Clearly they know what to cut.
Right.
But has there been, even knowing that you are such a nice guy and that the intentions are correct, has there been interviews that were completely scrapped and never shown the light of day?
I'm thinking, yeah, first of all, yes, absolutely. 1,000%. You can't do like the volume I do without that happening occasionally, but the percentage is very, very minuscule. And I'd like to say like, as I've gone further in my career, I know how to steer it in the right direction so that we avoid those minefields without it being like a fawning, you know, just like empty conversation. But I'm trying to think of the ones that come to mind that are kind of fun. It happened in the early years more in, there were some sketches as I was like, the sketches were big swings. Like I was not like trained or whatever as a comedy writer. I kind of learned it as I went. I loved comedy growing up, among other things.
My favorite thing of all time. Agreed.
I mean, I I grew up, like, even when I got out of school, I took some stand-up classes. I did stand-up for like a 5-second period. It wasn't for me, but I enjoyed it and loved it and admired it. So I don't know what it was, but the chutzpah of youth, when I was at MTV, I started to do these sketches, and I was like just collaborating with a friend at MTV, and we started to like write these kind of silly sketches and get people to do it. Now, early on, we got a few people to do sketches, and two come to mind that were never aired, that just didn't work. And they didn't work for a couple of reasons. One is Justin Bieber. Justin Bieber about, I mean, this has got to be like 12 years ago. It was one of those things where like, and this is like height of like Bieber mania. This is like, he is ruling the world. He was doing 1,000 things. We were in LA. We were supposed to get like 45 minutes with him. It was like, he was teaching me how to like, it was like an infomercial of like how to be Justin Bieber, like kind of a thing. And it was one of those things where he had not been prepped for it. He didn't know what he was walking into. They cut us down from like, I'm sure you've experienced this, where like, oh, we say you have 45 minutes and then you end up with like 20 minutes or whatever. So this is one of those cases where it was probably something like that. Like, oh yeah, you've got 45 minutes. And by the time he showed up like hours late, we ended up with like 10 minutes and like the sketch couldn't be done in 10 minutes. So what we ended up with was like a Frankenstein bit that was just not usable. I think we ended up using like little bits of it for like an outtakes reel years later, but he was also a kid back then. I'm sure he's great now and mature and whatever, but he just wasn't like in the headspace as like a teenager to like, you know, be accommodating or helpful. So that was a shoot that didn't go well. The one that really hurts, because this is an actor that I hold in such high esteem, and one actually you were asking about who I've like never done, never had him on the podcast. This is top of the list. Gary Oldman. Love Gary Oldman.
Oh my gosh. About nostalgia from 80s, 90s.
Come on.
One of the greatest actors of all time.
The Professional, Bram Stoker's Dracula. I mean, all of it. Tip-toes. I was obsessed with all of it. Tiptoes. I love that you know Tiptoes.
Yeah, Oscar-worthy performance, man.
Anybody that's listening or watching, Google the Tiptoes trailer, one of the greatest trailers ever. Oh my God. Anyway, he was promoting a film called Red Riding Hood, which you may not remember. Most people don't. It was from Catherine Hardwicke, who had directed Twilight. It was like a Red Riding Hood, like horror take. It was one of those cases where we had a sketch that was approved by the studio. They're like, great, do the sketch. We're in a hotel room. He walks in. He has no idea what he's walking into. Literally, I have like a pinata up and like all these weird props. And he's like, walks in. He's like, what are we doing here?
Oh, no.
And I have to like try to explain to Gary Oldman, like, oh, here's the bit. Like, here's the script you've never seen. Can you go with it? And like 5 minutes into the sketch, he just said to me, he just leans over to me. He goes, I just don't think my heart's in this. And I was like, Gary Oldman, I love you. We can stop. Let's just stop. Everybody good. Take the pinata down. Let's not inflict any more injury to Gary Oldman. But that one always sticks. We've never aired any of that footage.
Oh my gosh.
Against Gary.
I'm feeling the heartbreak.
Oh, it took me years. I've seen him a couple times and years later. I have no relationship with him. No, he has no memory of it. But I have apologized like numerous times. So like, just so you know, years ago, I had a pinata in front of you and you had no idea what you were walking into. I apologize.
Yeah, you speak to one of the largest issues I think that I've experienced, because I'm very new to this. The show was, you know, I think was just meant to, I don't even have an answer for that. How it was born was like almost like Hot Ones, where we have a few drinks and just kind of break the ice. And then we started getting comedians on and then some actors and celebrities on. And it was like, oh, okay, this is kind of evolving. And those conversations tend to be like, if you can break through that celebrity barrier, especially over drinks, and you all of a sudden see the human in them, and the conversation can be like beautiful. It can be a beautiful conversation. But what kills me, what I've experienced is, you know, like we will pack up and fly a film crew and all these things to LA or some other place to film this thing. And then the actor or person has not been briefed at all what it is. I mean, we did one with, and the interview went fine. And we actually still broke through the ice without alcohol. It was Ray Fisher from Justice League.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. He sat down and there's all these bottles in front of us and he's like, I'm sorry, what's this? And I'm like, oh,
I know. Yeah. So I 1000% relate. Yeah. It happens all the time. People don't realize that's
His team just didn't brief him. And that's the one thing that's like hard to, same thing with Alan Richardson, a great interview. What's great is you don't just rely on the alcohol to break the ice, right?
Sure.
Ray Fisher and I have a very similar upbringing. So when I found out about his mother and what he does for her, it was like a boom, we bonded like nothing. And then Alan Richardson, same thing. I sent him a whole case of alcohol. And then right before we start recording, he's like, I've been sober for years. I'm like, what? Oh, no. It doesn't say that online. So like, why didn't your team say something? They sent me your address. But
you surrounded me with my triggers. Thanks.
So, but it worked out. We had a great conversation. I thoroughly enjoyed the new Reacher show on Amazon. So same thing. I love film, as much as I love film, I don't think I could say I love it to the same level as you. You like live in New York. You've lived and breathed it for 30, 40, 40 years.
Sure. Yeah.
It's something that I can appreciate. We can bond over, but it's heartbreaking when they walk in and they're like, what's this? I have no idea what we're doing. So
it makes you stronger in a way. I mean, you have to adapt. You have to adapt to any situation. And because often, like, depending on the gig I'm doing, sometimes I could be doing like a comedic interview. Sometimes I could be doing a serious interview. And, often I know within 3 minutes, like, what's the vibe, and had, like, I may have come in with a certain game plan, but I have to read the room and I have to read the talent. And if I don't know them already, like, okay, they're not going to go to 11 with this. I'm going to have to like get them there. So this is a business where it's all about the interaction and reading who you're talking to and being in the moment. It's what, when people ask me about, like, the art of interviewing, for me, it's not, and I bet you can relate to this, it's less about the questions on the page. It really isn't. That's a factor, sure, of what you want to talk about. It's about being in the moment and looking somebody in the eyes and feeling their energy and just talking to them like a human being, which sounds really basic, but in my experience, 90% of the folks that do what we do don't talk to quote unquote talent like they're human, which is such a crazy thing to say, but like, listen, react, be a human being, even around like ginormous movie stars. It's harder than it sounds, but that's what you got to do.
Yeah. The vice versa, the sadness of them not being briefed is one thing, but the thing you mentioned about them, you'll have them for 45 minutes and then they show up, it's like, you only have 10. That's happened one time to me. And the victory, the satisfaction of them starting that way, being the very closed off, and then having a conversation and feeling that you're breaking through to them as a human. And then all of a sudden that 10 minute thing, it ends up
magically
being,
magically
is 30, 40 minutes. And you're like, all right, what a victory.
That's great. So, that's the best. Yeah. Yeah.
Have you experienced that at all? Has there been someone that you've won over where you felt like they were a little disconnected and then you punched through and got to them?
Yeah. Here's one. And this is an actor that I consciously avoided because I knew like his reputation. I'd had some experiences with him. I knew he was just kind of like a prickly kind of, or just kind of a tough interview. Christoph Waltz, two-time Oscar winner. And he's a serious dude. He's like, and generally speaking, what I say to folks is like, I can talk to anybody if they have a sense of humor, particularly a sense of humor about themselves. Like,
Germans are not tremendously known for their sense of humor.
Yeah. He doesn't open himself to smiles and happiness. He seems like he's very just like, he's a formidable person to talk to. And his folks actually pitched him to me for the podcast. And I was like, I don't know. I mean, this is a long form conversation. It's 45 minutes. Like, what if like in the first 5 minutes, I can't get him to really just,
talk.
Yeah. And I think that raised my game. Honestly, I kind of like did. I mean, I'm kind of a maniac when it comes to research and I always over prepare, but I don't know. I did a lot of research and he opened up. He really did. And I actually found myself like relating to him and him relating to me and him smiling and laughing at times and me really enjoying him as a conversationalist. And that was, as you say, those are the ones you kind of really take pride in. Like, anybody can talk to, to name drop for a second, like anybody can do an interview with Dwayne Johnson, Hugh Jackman, like these notorious, like good guys that are just like,
very charismatic
charm, like out the wazoo, Like they ooze it. But it is the ones that are pricklier, that don't suffer fools, that demand excellence and engagement, that I take pride in. And he's one that, like, I mean, I consciously avoided him, but he ended up being a great guest. And I take a lot of pride in that one.
Yeah. He reminds me of, Daniel Day-Lewis with an accent, right? Like there's a level of, stone,
yes,
like such a serious heaviness to him that the idea of, and I didn't know that you interviewed him. I'm going to go back and see if I can find that interview.
Yeah.
But the idea of such a serious person actually opening up is definitely a win. It's a huge win.
You know, I will say, again, this is all about name dropping because it's what I do, sadly. But like I interviewed Daniel Day-Lewis many years ago, not for the podcast, but I did him for that movie, Nine, he did like many years ago. And contrary to what you would think, super charming, like sweet, soft-spoken, like not Christoph. I mean, I totally get what you're saying because like the way he commits the roles and the kind of roles he takes. But like
heavy, yeah.
Yeah, but he was the best. I would have killed for like a real conversation with him. He clearly never liked to do press. And now that he's retired, I think that ship has sailed. But that was one that was surprising in a great way.
The win that I take is what happens after the interview, right? Do they hang around for a minute?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like Blake Anderson and Adam Devine did the interview. I'm going to name drop, although it's not Daniel Day-Lewis or
no.
Kathy Bates, but they showed up and I don't think they quite understood what the interview was as well, but they're these fun, you know, charismatic guys once the camera's on. And then they hung around for like 2 hours after the interview.
Amazing.
And just drank and talked. And I was like, oh, this is like worth everything, like worth the trip to LA, worth everything to the part that doesn't end up on camera. And same thing with Cameron Monaghan. I'm such a Cameron Monaghan fan.
Cool.
And dude hung out on my balcony smoking cigarettes for 3 hours. I was like, I don't even smoke cigarettes, but I'll smoke a cigarette you. With Cameron Monaghan. Yeah.
of course. That's awesome. Yeah. No, I've done some stuff with those Workaholics guys. They're great. They're the best. And yeah, when it's like, there's no differentiation between, on camera and off, and you're like, oh wait, we're just you know, you're not gonna be my best friend for life, but we can just like be real people. And that's really great. And that's part of like, again, the joy of sticking around as long as I have is like just a long level of familiarity with these folks where they trust me. And like, there's less difference between on camera and off. And it's a really nice thing where like, at this point, you know, I'm not hanging out with these folks in my downtime, but like, I do have, you know, like, kind of real levels of familiarity and semi-friendship with some of these folks that, you know, I used to put on a pedestal.
Yeah. Well, and I think the most you can, not even the most you can hope for, but the best case scenario is, yes, you do have a genuine conversation, even if they don't stick around immediately after, but it's like a moment of like one of the greatest things I'll get is an email from their publicist after said, that was great. Perfect. He loved it, but whatever, whether or not that's true, it feels good. And then the, you know, we're not gonna be best friends, but if I get a follow on Twitter, I'm like, hey, like, what an interesting experience, you know?
Of course. I always like, yeah, I've definitely had those moments over the years. Like, I mean, and yeah, like I remember like, again, it's always the people that I followed when I was a kid. It's like when like Cameron Crowe started following me on Twitter, I was like, what? Why does Cameron Crowe care about me? How does he know who I am? Like Tim Burton, I did Tim Burton. I've done him a bunch of times. Tim Burton knows who I am. That's crazy to me. Like I skipped school to see Batman when I was 13 years old. Like that stuff is just will never be not be mind blowing to me.
It's correct. It's never old. The one of the things I wanted to understand a little bit, so I know you've had this 20-year history interviewing and being involved in MTV and of course Comedy Central. Was this the goal? Was this what you wanted? What was your long-term goal? What's 19-year-old Josh Horowitz planning for his life?
So when I was in college, I definitely like, I always a pop culture nerd. I grew up in New York City, loved movies, TV, New York Yankees. That was like, those are my things, right? That was first dream probably was to be like the Yankees, like play-by-play announcer. Didn't stick with that. But when I got to college, I did fall in love with radio. What we're doing right now. Radio was my first love, and the college newspaper. Started my own college talk show in school, and kind of learned in anonymity how to book people, interview people, failed while nobody was watching. And I knew I wanted to, by the time I got out of school, I knew I wanted to be in work in the media. I didn't know where or what or how. I think I secretly maybe wished and hoped I would be like a radio show host or in my, you know, dreams, a like on camera person, but it really wasn't something I actually entertained as like a realistic option. Out of school, I started, you know, I did some like media internships and I wasn't sure, like, do I go work for a radio station? Do I work for a talk show? It was kind of what I was open to anything because I just needed a job. And like, you know, I'm sure anybody can relate. I ended up, my first gig out of school was as a producer, and I was a lofty, or maybe an associate producer, a lofty title for someone my age, but it was a talk show hosted by Charlie Rose. For those who don't know, Charlie Rose was a PBS talk show host who had a great show, long form conversations with every manner of celebrity, politicians, actors, you know, athletes. Sadly, Charlie turned out to be a pretty crappy guy who was taken down by the Me Too movement. But the show remains, at least the show, you know, the history of the show remains. And it was a great, great learning experience for me. I worked there for 4 years and learned how to prep an interview, hosts, with like all the relevant information and book guests and suggest questions, and really in a comprehensive way. These weren't short interviews. These were ironically what I ended up doing myself later on. And then, yeah, like the short version is I kind of bounced around. I didn't know, like, again, what my ultimate path would be. Worked for a couple different talk shows, worked at a magazine, was a reporter for Us Weekly, wrote a book of interviews with filmmakers. And then I kind of stumbled into a gig at MTV my job title was the coordinating editor of MTV Movies Digital. It was not on camera role. I was not meant to be the host or anything, but they took a shot on me. They had seen, to date myself, I had a blog back in the day where I was talking about pop culture in a fun and obsessive way. And they're like, oh, this guy loves and knows movies. Let's take a shot on him. My on-air career didn't start really until I was after 30, which is very unusual kind of in this youth-obsessed media world. And it really just organically grew. You talked about like kind of how your show evolved, like, and kind of like, oh, let's just kind of try this and see what it becomes. You know, that's my greatest successes have been things that I didn't plan out, that I just kind of tried. I started doing interviews for MTV. They started to use me on camera. And then I was like, oh, would you guys be up if I try to do a sketch with John C. Reilly? And they're like, sure. First sketch was with John C. Reilly. Was amazing. And it's all the fun, cool stuff has blossomed from just like trying crap out and seeing if it works. Some of it hasn't worked, some of it has. And yeah, so a long-winded answer to your short question is there was no plan. There still is no plan. I've kind of just gone where the opportunity has been and never ceased to be curious about trying new forms out, whether it's a podcast or a sketch show, or going to be doing a new show for Paramount Plus soon. So it's like, you know, it's different ways to skin a cat, different kinds of interviews, different formats, but it keeps it interesting to keep trying new stuff.
Have you mentioned Paramount Plus? Are you able to talk about what, in some way, what it's supposed to be?
Yeah, I mean, I probably not, but I'll tell you. I mean, who cares? I mean, I don't think it's shrouded in secrecy. I'm doing what I can say. I won't say like the name of it, or I don't even know when it launches, but I'm going to be doing a series where I'm going to be talking to Paramount Plus talent, like prominent, like Paramount Plus talent, about their lives and careers. It's more of a straightforward, comprehensive conversation show. But you know, all the streaming services are kind of like looking inward now to
right.
prop up their own great talent. And
Paramount Plus, is that that's Yellowstone and
mm-hmm.
Yep. I'd be interested to. That means there's a very. I mean, we're now connected. What is it? 6 degrees of seven. Kevin Bacon. So Ryan Bingham was just in town, and
okay.
he's got great ties to Houston, and we talked a little bit about what's coming down the Taylor Sheridan pipeline in terms of things. So there's a very real chance that you'll be sitting with Ryan Bingham soon. What can I say? nothing's been signed on a dotted line yet, but I'll just put it this way. I work, I own a few spirits brands, whiskey products. He wants some advice on some things in that realm. So, hopefully I'll be helping, Ryan bring to life a cool project soon. But,
I like how this started with me revealing too much and ended with you in a conundrum. Like, oh my God, what have I done?
Yeah. So don't worry. No one's going to see this. I didn't realize, so nothing's been finalized yet, but, there's a few projects. So in the history of, as a separate note, definitely not referring to what I just said, but on a separate, completely separate note, the realm of celebrity spirits products is often not regarded well because one, they don't care about whiskey the way that say Sam Heughan does.
Right.
Or two, it's just done wrong. Like there's some things that are clearly wrong. So one of the things, I'm a big stand-up comic fan. One of the things that I want to do is there's a couple of New York comedians that I'm trying to bring to life. A whiskey, we've talked about it on the show. I can talk about it now. Mark Norman and Sam Morril won a whiskey for their podcast. Great New York stand-up comics. I know what they need to do for it to be well-received. I would like to help, my way of changing the spirits world would be to make those things done in a more respectful way.
Sure. Throwing your name on something and not having any knowledge of the.
Yes. I've talked to Sam and his partner, Alex. Have you ever talked to Alex?
Yeah, he's great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's so likable. Every conversation I've ever had with Alex has been tremendous, but.
I have a funny Alex story when you're done.
Well, I've talked to Sam about what do you want to do? And this is what I think, unsolicited advice. This is what I would also do. I think would be really well received from Sam. And they're crushing it right now. So they don't need my help, but things may develop. Poked him in the first interview that you should do more than whiskey, and he's done a tequila. So
I just tried it. It's very tasty. It's good.
I think they're definitely heading in the right direction, but what's your Alex story?
Oh, so I just went to London for the Outlander premiere, which was awesome. And
I watched it. It was awesome.
It was fun. And then I went to, they had a fun party there. I'd never met Alex in person. I'm talking to some folks and a gentleman comes up behind me, grabs me by the shoulders, and he just goes, I don't know what his accent is, to be honest, that maybe you do, but this guy says to me, I just wanted to come over and meet the man who has the most kissable face in this party. And I'm with like my wife and a friend, and I'm like, what is going on? Who is this dude? What is happening? And then he's like, it's Alex. And I'm like, oh, hey, Alex. So yes, he's a great dude. We finally connected in person. And I feel like I'm on the payroll for Sassenach Spirits by now. I should be getting a cut, but it's good stuff.
There's been a couple times where our schedules almost lined up to be down in Mexico at the same time. And I've had a drink with Sam. I would love to have a drink with Alex. Every phone call I've ever had with that man has lasted at least an hour. It's a long conversation about our kids, about our product. I mean, he's got a couple daughters. He couldn't be a more easy to talk to guy. He's very nice.
Yeah.
I think the direction they're heading is exciting because you have no idea what's next, right? Like it's not just flavored line extensions or something simple. It's like, no, it could be anywhere in the world. There could be a completely new spirit that Sam dips his toes in, which is great because it just speaks to his level of nerdiness, right? Like you're just obsessed with it.
No, I'm impressed with how he's built out. You know, it makes me gag a little bit to talk about someone's brand, but he's doing it right. He really is. Like, the Men in Kilts reality show, the Clanlands book, like these have all been hugely successful endeavors. And I think it's because they're not taking it lightly there, whether it's a spirit or a show or a book, it's just, it feels handmade. It feels like they're invested in it. So, it's part of the reason why, I'm more than happy to be, Google searched with Sam Hugh. It's like, he's a good dude. He's putting stuff the right way. So yes.
Well, it definitely makes it clear in my secret insecure rivalry of who's his best friend. When you Google Josh Horowitz and you see Sam as the first photo next to it. And so when you Google Chris, it's just a bunch of whiskey bottles.
Well, hey, you've seen enough of my stuff with Sam to know how much crap he gives me and how much he likes to tear me down.
Oh, so of course.
Along with being his quote unquote best friend, he's destroying my ego one fragile day at a time.
One meeting at a time, one interview at a time.
Yeah.
To pivot a little bit. So I know that you've got, what else did I send you?
Oh yeah. Let's see. So I have here, Prideful Goat, Straight Rye.
Oh, there we go. That's mine. That's my baby.
Congrats, dude. Yeah. And I've got, just so you know, I also have here, two Prideful Goats. And then this is a Kentucky Straight Bourbon.
Yeah. The 15 year. We'll end with that one.
Okay. So you want me to,
remember if I sent you a cognac or not, but,
This is going to sound really basic and stupid. Can I ask this question?
Sure.
Should I have a different glass?
I'll tell you. Okay. It's a great question. And so there is a lot of pomp and circumstance when it comes to, you should rinse it out and nose it before this. And a lot of that is bullshit. These are all cask strength, full proof whiskeys, what you're about to get into. Mm-hmm. So they're so overwhelmingly robust that anything that's in the glass is going to be immediately washed away.
Okay.
So, going from 100 proof Irish whiskey to I think it's 115 proof rye whiskey. Speaking of which, what's your experience? I know I've seen you do shots with Sam. Are you a drinker? What do you normally?
I'm a drinker, but I am so ignorant. I'm one of those. Over quarantine, I got my little home cocktail bar going briefly and tried to kind of get a little more sophisticated. Hasn't really taken. I mean, I love a good mixed drink. Don't get me wrong. But I have my wife is the wine aficionado. I'm the mixed drink guy, but I have no knowledge. This is why this is a little bit helpful. Even this is my ulterior motive to learn a little bit more and try a little bit more. I tequila, whiskey, I'm open to it all. Yeah.
Pretty. Yeah. So that's a pretty, yeah. So you're in, you enjoy drinking in general, but so with, again, there's a lot of pomp and circumstance, a lot of over dramatic, you have to do this, you have to do that. Right. It's very simple. I mean, we've all, even within the beer world, right? Like they have different glasses for different types of beer, but we've all been to a baseball game and drank a $15 beer, which is really a $2 beer out of a red cup, right? The one thing that can be a bit of a growing pain with this is it is cask strength. So what I tell people is to just take smaller and smaller sips until and leave it in your mouth. The alcohol is going to adjust it's going to soak into your tongue and your palate. It's going, your mouth's basically setting the stage to be drinking neat whiskey. So take a little sip, leave it in the front of your mouth. Wait for the numbing to kick in, then swallow. If you swallow and it's rough to swallow, you swallow too soon. So leave it in your mouth, let your mouth adjust. And then what'll happen is for the rest of the session of you sipping and drinking and whatever, you'll take slightly larger sips until you're full blown drinking neat whiskey straight from the barrel, which is always kind of like the most Sam Elliott. Speaking of which, have you talked to Sam Elliott?
He did the podcast a couple of years back.
He
was amazing. He started, talk about moments. He started to like well up and cry talking about his dad, talking about making an emotional connection. Sam Elliott crying in front of you in your office. Like what?
Amazing. Jesus Christ.
This is an
incredible life.
No, this is very helpful tips. I'm excited. So I shouldn't be drinking this with a bendy straw is what you're telling me.
You can. Bendy straw is fine, but I would still, what a lot of people do, and this is kind of our culture's fault, is we live in a shot culture.
Right.
So everything is immediately to the back of the throat. The trick is to, and I remember doing this. So when I decided that I was going to get into whiskey, many moons ago, I bought a bottle and I sat on the couch. I distinctly remember exactly where I was. And I said, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to learn how to drink whiskey neat. Because everything we do is with, cocktail or mixed or water or ice cube. It's all choking the spirit, which it's fine. If that's how you enjoy it, that's how you enjoy it. But the simplest way I tell people is take smaller and smaller sips until you adjust, even if it's literally a couple drops as you bring to your lips. And you're going to eventually just learn, and you'll find yourself liking drinking neat at cash strength without, you know, burning the hair off your face.
I love it. Well, you look forward to my bit where I was doing exact wrong thing on the carpet of the Outlander premiere, where we were doing shots of Sassenach spirits, but that's the last time. Now I'm going to be doing it the right way.
Well, the Scots did a lot right. I mean, that whole Glencairn glass was, has become iconic, right? Like that, that this shape, this tulip shape has been brought to us by Scotland, and, there's nothing better to learn how to drink spirits neat than in a Glencairn glass. But I had another question I was going to ask. Oh, I remember. So we were pivoting. We tried the new whiskey, rye whiskey, cask strength.
Spicy. It's like a spicy on the tongue.
Yes, it's rye. Rye is known to have a little spicy bite to it. This is a straight rye whiskey. It's about 6 years old. There's a lot of bubble gum in it, which is kind of neat. But yes, you get that little rye bite.
Like it. Yeah.
I wanted to, let's talk about Andrew Garfield lying to your face.
Oh, that bastard. if he weren't so charming, I would hate him.
First of all, he is so charming. Him. And I don't know why her name is skipping me at the moment.
That's okay.
His Mary Jane.
Emma's the best. Emma Stone is yes. But people ask me like who's like the most real. Like I've seen Emma like in the wild in like real life situations. Same person, couldn't be nicer. Has done like, again, I sound like a horrible ass like name dropper, but has been like nice things for me like outside of like the work stuff. Like she's like the best.
Well,
the best.
There's something that comes through specifically with Emma and Andrew that come across as genuine humans.
Yeah.
That are kind of notoriously known to kind of avoid social media and a lot of times interviews, right? Like I know that I don't think there's been a long form discussion with Emma. Am I wrong?
No, Emma's done the long form thing. She's on my podcast. Yeah, she has. I mean, less so I think in recent years, there's that kind of thing where like, you kind of have to do it when you're like in the awards train. Now I think post when she won for La La Land and she's like now starting a family, she's definitely retreated from that for a bit because she just frankly doesn't have to. You reach a certain level and you're like, I kind of did it. I've reached a certain stature and diminishing returns. But
this is not about her. It's about the fans.
Right, exactly. <I'm just kidding. laughs> Think about the fans, Emma. No, she's the best. I have nothing bad to say about Emma.
There's this great need, especially in the current environment with celebrity to attract when you are genuine and human and kind and nice, like Andrew Garfield, Emma Stone, what's the guy's name from Third Rock from the Sun? He's you just interviewed.
Oh,
him.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yes. Like they're so human and they're, you know, a lot of them are parents and have families and there's this, for me, there's this attraction to, I want to see them talk like humans for an hour.
Yeah.
Not the press junket interviews, they don't have to necessarily do the podcast circuit, but to see these megastars, A-listers, right? Just be human for an hour is the most fascinating part of podcasts.
Yeah. No, I will say invariably most of the ones that people like perceive as that are that. It's like, you know, everyone's like Paul Rudd's the nicest guy. Guess what? Paul Rudd is the nicest guy.
He's the nicest guy. Like, also doesn't age a day.
Totally the same off and on camera. Like I've had a man crush on Paul for 15 years. Like is the coolest dude and is just like the sweetest. And Will Ferrell, like notoriously the nicest man on the planet. Like and is the same off camera. Like it makes me laugh off camera when I've seen him at things as much as on camera. Like it's a real privilege to like, look, at the end of the day, they're still human beings. Let's not put them on a pedestal. They're not any more special than you or I. They're human beings, but they're real. And it's really cool to like get to know really talented people that are nice on and off camera. So, yeah.
Well, I know they're real because, he lied to your face.
He did lie to my face. I bought it. Did you buy it? What were you thinking? Do you think he was going to?
Well, the whole world was talking about leaks and speculating. And I'm curious. I know the answer to if I were to ask this question, but I was going to ask, before that interview, are there things that he says to avoid talking about, or did anyone know you were going in to question him about it? Because I mean, there's been a few, like for instance, I interviewed, well, I don't want to say, but I interviewed someone within the Star Wars universe, and there was a recent controversy within the Star Wars universe. Mm-hmm. And before going into the interview, they were like, you know, don't ask her about this.
Yep.
And I said, okay, I'm happy to avoid those things. But with the level of secrecy around Marvel and that whole massive, you know, multi-billion dollar franchise.
Yep.
I'm curious if, you know, because I've seen you confront celebrities at times in the nicest way, of course, but like to kind of like hold them to, yeah, what people are talking about, like, you know, it, you know, there's a lot of speculation around this, and of course he lied in the best possible way.
It's a fun game to play, like, because like I'm not an idiot. I don't expect anyone to say to me like, yeah, I'm in it. Like, who wants that? I don't want it to be ruined for me or anything, but like it's part of the game. This goes back, like it goes years ago. I had one that like also circulated early on. I remember talking to Marion Cotillard when she was in Dark Knight Rises, and there were rumors that she was going to play Talia al Ghul, who she ended up playing. And she just lied straight to my face. And like, again, I didn't expect her to say, yes, I'm playing the bad guy in the Dark Knight Rises, but like, it's fun to play the game. And like, then you like can play the clip and you can play the clip back later. And sure enough, we had a great exchange when it turned out she was the bad guy in Dark Knight Rises. Similarly with Andrew, to answer your question, nope, no stipulations. I've certainly been in that situation that you were, like where people have been like, hey, can you avoid this? And sometimes I'll say, sure, no problem. Sometimes I'll be like, I gotta at least ask something. It's up to them to like bat it away. But in that case, for whatever reason, he was promoting a movie nobody saw, by the way. This was for mainstream. No one's seen mainstream. It was a tiny movie early in the year. So like a lot of this is luck too. Like, yes, it was very fortunate that like I had the access and he said yes to doing a long form conversation with me. Because again, keep in mind, like most people that are getting Andrew Garfield for an interview are getting like 5 minutes with him if they're lucky. And like you can't really like go in on Spider-Man if you're talking about another project in 5 minutes. You have like three questions. I had 45 minutes. So I like spend 25 minutes on his current project. I have the luxury of like talking about other stuff.
Slipping it in after, yeah.
Totally. Not to mention, I do have a long history with him. So like, I've been talking to him for probably 10 years. So like there's some level of familiarity. I know now he was ready. Like he knew like I could potentially go there, that I probably would, but knowing that I'm like a sentient, smart human being and a nerd. So I'm sure he had it in the back of his brain of how he was going to answer the question. The thing I delight about that conversation is, and I like to like point this out, is I never asked him if he was in Spider-Man. I made a point of not asking him. I just literally, if you watch the tape, I say like, I don't even know how to ask about these Spider-Man rumors. And he just stops me right there. And the gentleman doth protest too much. He starts saying, dude, I have to tell you, I don't know how this started. I'm not even in. He just goes on and on. And I'm like, I didn't ask you, dude. I was just saying Spider-Man. And he went off on this crazy rant. So very telling in retrospect. And then, yeah, he was very kind to come afterwards and kind of have like his first on camera, like deep dive on all the lies. And it was really fun to kind of like go through every rumor and how he obfuscated and how he avoided stuff. And yeah, like that was one of those like perfect storm moments where like I was in the right place, right time, right actor, right film. Doesn't happen like that often, but that was a really cool one.
I mean, everything lined up just right. I watched the follow-up interview after I'd already seen the greatest Spider-Man movie of all time, by the way.
Come on.
And you call him out on like, you know, you son of a bitch. And then you go, I went back and found the original interview and of course went through a couple ones past that. And I thought, man, it was a perfect moment in time. And I'm curious, has there ever been a moment where you've asked someone or caught someone? I mean, like for instance, there was an image of Andrew that people were circulating of him in costume on set that people said was Photoshop, but it turned out to be completely real.
Right.
Has there ever been a time that you've caught someone and they're like, all right, listen, man, I'll tell you the truth, but you have to cut this out?
Oh, I'm thinking, I'm sure there have been, but now I'm on my second.
I've had a couple whiskey moments where, yeah. I should have asked you on a third whiskey.
exactly.
I've had a couple moments where I got an honest reply about things coming down pipeline. And one, I mean, the Alan Richson interview, he says it on camera that, Brandon, correct me if I'm wrong, and he did make me delete it, but we're talking about his history in the DC animated universe. You know who Alan Richson is?
Yeah, of course. Reacher, yeah. Right. Yeah.
So, he's played in the DC realm quite a bit. And I asked him, have you ever thought about hopping over to the Marvel universe? And he starts smiling fucking ear to ear, so happy, and says that he, there's something coming down the pipeline that he can't really talk about. Maybe yes, maybe no. And I thought, that's the best I could have hoped for, right? Like,
right.
And I fully expected that who was on the call to say, hey, Chris, can you cut this? Didn't ask me to cut it. So we left it in. And so I am eager to see how this plays out.
Yeah, that's a great one. See, it's so funny. You never know how, you really never know. Like, sometimes they'll stumble into something. Sometimes they're just super tight-lipped. A lot of stuff has happened to me, like, again, this level of familiarity. A lot of it's off camera. They'll like show me after an interview. They'll be like, hey, here's a screen test I did for this amazing role. Do you want to look at like a photo? And I'm like, oh my God, why didn't you show this to me? I want to tell everybody awesome. About this. Like, I mean, I've had that happen a lot. But I've certainly stumbled into a bunch of, like, especially early in my career, I was more like scoop driven. Like when I was doing the junkets, like try to get the scoop, try to like get the break the news. Like I remember, like, again, way back when, like, Aaron Eckhart, like at a random junket for some movie, like revealed he was playing Two-Face, which was like, what? Like, I remember running back to like MTV, like with the tape. I was like, we have to run this. He just like threw it out there. Like, oh, by the way, I'm playing Two-Face in Dark Knight. I'm like,
and it wasn't out yet.
It wasn't out yet. Well, wow. Here's what he was cast as Harvey Dent in the movie. People assumed, oh, maybe he would also play Two-Face, but he literally said like, I'm playing Two-Face in the movie, which like to comic geeks was like, what? And I definitely, like, there was a period in my life, and it's still an aspect of me that like gets off on that. Like, oh, if you can break like a big movie geek news thing, like in the context of a conversation, like it's just a rush. Matt Smith, I had on, you know, Doctor Who.
Such a fan.
So great. I'm like one of my favorite, like, whether you, I'm not a Crown person, but if you want to listen to a fun conversation on the podcast, I had him and Claire Foy on, one of my all time favorites, because it's so random. It's not about the Crown at all. It's just two like witty, cool British folks like riffing with me for 45 minutes. Highly recommended. But he did the podcast a couple months ago, and he had this like extended like conversation with me about, like, he was supposed to be in the last Star Wars movie, Rise of Skywalker.
Right.
And he basically said like it was a really cool role. He elaborated more than you would expect somebody to, because like they have all these NDAs, etc. And it became like a huge thing. And it reminded me of back in the day, like when I was like chasing those kind of scoops, like, oh yeah, I'm like kind of in the middle of a news cycle now. I'm in the middle of like, and it's a cool rush to like be there for that.
But in being such a fan, I mean, Matt Smith was the doctor that brought, and I hate to say this in this way, cause it implies that we weren't already together, but it brought my family together.
Oh,
I have three daughters and a son and four kids. And, we watched, I was a David Tennant. The David Tennant was my doctor. And, when Matt Smith took over, I showed it to my wife and daughters, and they became obsessed. So then every week during Matt Smith's time as the doctor, we watched it as a family.
Love it.
And it was this, his time as a doctor was so emotional. Like, it was so great. I mean, we talked about weeping angels for years. The girls were terrified every time they would see an angel statue in someone's front yard or something, you know, but,
you should get Karen Gillan on, by the way, Karen Gillan. Delightful. Oh,
same.
I bet she's a whiskey drinker. I feel like she's got to be.
Oh, she would be great, right? A couple drinks with Karen.
Yeah.
But yes, to see them make the transition from, I'm not saying that BBC is smaller, but to see them make the transition to like A-list, well-known in the zeitgeist within America, like Karen is, I mean, she's there. She's amazing.
Yeah.
Matt, I was such a fan. I remember that rumor of him being in Star Wars. And then nothing came of it.
Nobody had ever asked him. He never shot his stuff. It's like one of those things. Like, again, they do so many interviews. It's hard to like get the scoop from anybody at this point, because it's all happenstance. Who happens to get them first, whatever. for whatever reason, nobody had ever asked Matt Smith, like, what happened to those reports that, like, you were going to be in Star Wars? And again, I had the luxury of time and the right timing. And he, no, he never shot anything. He didn't really say who he was playing, but he, like, basically said, like, it was a really cool, juicy role. And because of everything around Rise of Skywalker, which obviously was a fraught, weird, like, they were clearly rewriting as they were going, it just made that soundbite that much more interesting. I'm already looking forward to, he's in the new, what is it? Mobius, Morbius? I can never remember the name, the new Jared Leto.
Mobius?
Mobius,
right?
Yeah.
Is
it Morbius?
No, I think it's Mobius is the Mobius strip.
Yes, that's the that's the cooler one.
Morbius. But,
Morbius. Morbius, Morbius. Now I'm betraying. They're like, you're a poser, Josh. You should know it's Morbius. But Matt, I'm hoping to get Matt on soon again because he's like, so fun.
He's in the prequel to Game of Thrones, right?
He is. We talked about that too. He's already shot it. Yeah.
So let's talk about that process. You and if you've got, let me know how you're doing on time. But
I'm okay. I'm okay for now. Yeah. All good. I'm having fun.
What dictates your schedule in terms of do you see what's coming out and you say, okay, I want to, Morbius is about to come out. So then you time it around the release, obviously. And then you reach out to people, or a lot of them are reaching out to you. What's the process?
It's a mix. I'm lucky enough that people pitch me, especially for the podcast folks, which is great. Like, the luxury of choice is amazing. But I'm constantly like, I have like my calendar right here of like all upcoming movie and TV releases. And it's like, I love to work. Like, I love this stuff, and I'm like a workaholic, and I have a show for Comedy Central. I do constant interviews for MTV. I have my podcast. I do something called Game Night with guests.
I saw it.
I have this new Paramount thing. So it's like, I have no less than 5 shows I'm like constantly booking. So it's like, I'm playing like, sometimes I feel like I'm playing like 6-dimensional chess, like looking at the movie release calendar, like, okay, where do I put, like, what do I pitch Matt Smith for? What do I go for this? It's a great problem to have. Like, I know I sound like I'm like, what an asshole. Like, oh, he has to choose. But like, it's kind of like budgeting my time, but also figuring out like where somebody goes when. And also, people always think like, oh, like nobody says no to you, Josh. Like, no, guys. Let me tell you, I get 1,000 no's. I get mostly no's from people I ask. Yes, I get people pitched to me, but I'm chasing folks for comedy, for sketches, for the podcast, for everything. And no matter what level you get to in the industry, you're going to get more no's than yeses. It's like the same thing you always hear about, like, you know, there's always another, like, you know, after party that you can't get into, another like velvet rope to get by. It doesn't matter, unless you're Brad Pitt, unless you're Leonardo DiCaprio, unless you're Jimmy Fallon, like there's always going to be another room, another echelon of guests. So I'm always hustling. I'm always balancing it. I'm always overworked, but I also love this stuff. And
One of the positive, I hate to say it this way, but slight silver linings to COVID is the normalcy of remote interviews. Now they don't have to be in the same, we don't have to fly the crew to LA or New York. And the Zoom interviews are, I think they've definitely become quite the norm and make it a lot easier to book anyone, right?
Yeah, less excuses. Like, where are you? Well, oh, you can't like just put a laptop up in your living room for 30 minutes? I agree. I definitely found booking, when COVID hit and quarantine hit, Comedy Central was kind enough to come to me and say, hey, let's do a quarantine talk show on Zoom almost immediately. And we launched that, and that was called Stir Crazy. And now it's called the Untitled Josh Horowitz Show. And it's not, again, it's not like we can get everyone, but like the bar is high because the accessibility is pretty easy at this point.
Pretty flexible.
That being said, I'm doing more in-person stuff. I'm trying to find a right balance of like for special stuff to do it in person versus Zoom. So thankfully that's kind of starting to tip back to a balance.
How often are you filming every week?
Podcast is every week. I would say like there's at least 2 or 3 shoots a week for me. Again, between those 5 different gigs, but you know, some weeks there can be nothing, some weeks there could be like six things. And it's less about the, I mean, it's less about the time of the actual shoot. It's just about the prep and like all the stuff you have to watch. Like, again, I know people listening to this are like, boo, you have to watch a TV show.
You have to binge watch a show before it even comes out. Yeah.
But like, I'm doing Sam Jackson tomorrow and he has a 6-hour like Apple thing. And I like, it's a career conversation. So not only do I like have to like dive into Sam Jackson's career, but I have to like watch his 6-hour series and think about how I want to approach a conversation with a guy that's like a serious dude. So it's the hour of talking to the person is almost the least of it. It's all the prep.
The prep with Samuel L. Jackson. I think I remember reading a fact once that he was a pallbearer.
Martin Luther King, right?
Martin Luther King's funeral.
Yes.
The ability to do any research on that man for the past 50 years.
Yeah.
No, is,
he's like Forrest Gump. He's just been part of our collective history. No, I'm psyched for it though. I'm such a fan and I've done him before, but he's kind of again, one of those people that doesn't suffer fools, but I like the challenge sometimes of someone that's a little.
Of winning him over.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing's better than winning a grumpy person over for sure.
Yeah. Not say he's grumpy, but he can be tough. He's not
sure,
going
to, sure, sure.
You know, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, listen, I can't thank you enough. This was great.
Thanks, man.
I got a super full fun hour. What's that?
Super fun. Honestly, this really flew by. So thank you.
Drinks tend to make that make time fly. Like it's an hour six and we haven't even gotten the last one. Keep the bottles, obviously, use them, learn, you know, drink them, share them, you know, these are meant to be shared with people and to have great conversations. And if there's anyone that I know that is good at having a conversation, it's Josh Horowitz. Thanks, so buddy. I can't thank you enough, buddy.
Thanks. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Well, listen, where can people find you?
The easiest place, you know, on all the social medias, I'm Joshua Horowitz. As you hear the New York sirens behind me. That's the easiest place. I always put up all my like MTV News and Comedy Central and podcasts there. So check me out.
Thanks. Cheers.
Thanks, buddy. Cheers to you.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Thanks for selling your car to Carvana. Here's your check.
Whoa, when did I get here?
What do you mean?
I swear it was just moments ago that I accepted a great offer from Carvana online. I must have time traveled to the future.
It was just moments ago. We do same day pickup. Here's your check for that great offer.
It is the future.
It's the present and just the convenience of Carvana. Sorry to blow your mind.
It's all good. Happens all the time.
Sell your car the convenient way to
Carvana.
Pickup times may vary and fees may apply.